Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and we are continuing to study The Organon by Samuel Hahnemann. Today is August 31st, 2010, and you're listening to show number 84 of Who's Reading the Organon. We will be reading aphorism 61 after some introduction. And I think maybe I've had a couple of glitches go lately. One is I sent a test message out, and it reached everyone on the World Wide Web on the HWC instead of directly to the administrators who make the website move along and approve members and check that everything's going. So I apologize for that. However, it's been great getting all the responses from everyone. I hope when you do the site that you remain active, comment, and post some really good messages. Also, I'm getting information. The weather report from Jagat is saying that there are heavy rains, and in fact, we are going to be expecting some big hurricanes coming a couple of days right here. So our connections might be wiped out. We'll see how we hold up. As inspiration, Dabu Nayan on the network posted in his update, when you know homeopathy, you'll fall in love with homeopathy. And there's not much more you can say after. Also, Dr. Dushyant has been posting a lot of wonderful tips and hints, and also on his not just blog posts where he's been directing us to visit his Scrib information of all of his work, but also he writes in cases of cyclical vomitings where no pathology is found, brushing teeth after meals helps a lot. So it's kind of fun to receive some just general tips from people about better living or getting rid of symptoms that you don't really have any way to deal with at the moment and to alleviate without suppressing. He has also put up many, many beautiful photographs, and with us he gives a beautiful title and a description. So one of the ones he's put up recently was a pudica, which is Touch Me Not. And he says that mimosa has sensitivity and headache above the eyes, aggravated by movement, ameliorated by closing the eyes. That kind of reminds me a little bit about tabacum, because I know that also is better with the eyes closed. Irritation of the conjunctiva and nasal mucus, pains in the shoulders, diarrhea with abdominal colic and irritating stools, feeling that the body is too big. So that's quite a sensation. And it's really nice to be able to look at the photograph and read it to help it stick in our mind. He's also put another one for Austonius scalaris family, Apocynaceae, which is a common name he puts as devil's tree, blackboard tree, and its Sanskrit name is Satparna, which means seeds in a whirl. The scalaris word is due to the fact that wooden slates, takhti, somebody help my pronunciation, were made for school children from it. also serves as support for Piper nigrum and planted as shade tree. The drug is considered efficacious in chronic diarrhea syntheria. It is useful in malaria and brings down temperature gradually without causing perspiration and exhaustion. Thank you, Dr. Dushyant Kamal Dari, for those little bits of information about our plant family. And when I have something like this, I'm wondering whether these are the herbal effects that are used or how we use them homeopathically. So maybe you can enlighten us on that. If anybody has any comments, I would welcome them on the live chat, or I can check to see if anybody has tried to call in, because I haven't been checking the chat board there, the call-in board. Okay, so I wanted to continue on with some of the reading, and I hope everyone has been watching the videos that are put on the front page, because they really can be quite a bit of entertainment and educational at the same time, learning a lesson from the present one by Robinson, who's talking about creativity in schools and how we teach our children. He is quite dry humor, and you can laugh all the way through but learn at the same time. The other thing about the news is that we know that billions and billions of chickens have been affected. Okay, so a billion, so many eggs have been tainted with salmonella and people are being poisoned. It's a very important issue that's going on today. And how are we going to take care of it? Are we going to educate the public on proper care of their animals, or the fact that what do we have to do about it when they're industrialized farms? And here we found out today that state senators in the United States want to require farmers to vaccinate their hens. Well, what will be the repercussions of this now that foods that we're eating already have hormones and antibiotics, other additives, and now you're going to introduce another element of a vaccinated animal, and then these are such primary things that we eat in our basic diet, being the egg and the chicken. So please post your comments, and what can we do about this important issue? Moving on to the aphorism for today, and I do welcome any comments. 61. Hahnemann writes, had physicians been capable of reflecting on the sad results of the antagonistic employment of medicines, they had long since discovered the grand truth. True radical healing art must be found in the exact opposite of such an antipathic treatment of the symptoms of disease. They would have been convinced that as a medicinal action antagonistic to the symptoms of the disease, an antipathically employed medicine is by only transient relief, and after that is passed by invariable aggravation. The converse of that procedure, the homeopathic employment of medicines according to similarity of symptoms, must effect a permanent and perfect cure if at the time the opposite of their large doses, the most minute doses, are exhibited. Either the obvious aggravation that ensued from their antipathic treatment, nor the fact that no physician ever effected a permanent cure, diseases of considerable or of long standing, unless some homeopathic medicinal agent was accidentally a chief ingredient in his prescription, nor yet the circumstance that all the rapid and perfect cures ever performed were always affected by the supervention upon the old disease of one of the similar ever taught them. During such a long series of centuries, this truth the knowledge can alone conduce to the benefit of the sick. That is aphorism number 61. Not read the footnote to that one as yet. What is he saying? I'm kind of thinking this is kind of cute. It's the opposite of the opposite. The opposite of antipathic treatment. Oh, my. My thoughts keep going. I don't know why. Every time I hear the word antipathic, I keep thinking of antipasto. But it says that. So let's take a look at what he's talking about here. Hahnemann is asking the physicians to take a step back and of what they have been doing. He literally says for centuries, for long series of centuries. So since his time, which has been another couple of centuries, he's already seen and deduced that they are producing effects through their treatments that they already observe. And rather than using, they're using generalizations to excuse their behavior, maybe to save face in what they're doing or whatever it is. But he's asking the physicians of his day and age to reflect and do some soul searching about the means that they're using, because they're not getting a permanent and lasting cure. They're only giving palliative or temporary relief, and then it comes back in a vengeance. So my question is, and maybe you listeners out there can say, why is it that these people cannot be convinced? You know, in a way it reminds me of the skeptics today, and they are in every single field against movement forward in realizing what they're observing in the world. There are people that are against global warming. There are people against believing that there is a organized force, a creator. There are skeptics in politics and science and social sciences all over, and they are very vocal. So in opposition, we have to be vocal and speak out. Did anybody have an idea? I'm just posting this out to the group, and maybe there will be a place comment online about why it is that they cannot be convinced after seeing it for themselves, hearing people tell them what another way of thinking. Dana Ullman and many people who are out there really knocking down doors call them denialists. To me, true scientists would be more objective. They would put their prejudices aside and look at what is happening before their eyes. So here are the kind of things that I'm picking up from Aphorism 61, that they should see that there's a sick individual. They should see that they're in a drugged state by using crude medicinal agents. They should see that the body is trying to come out of this state and fights back harder. So that's why the symptoms keep returning at even more intensity. And they do. The next thing they do is they knock them down with some more drugs. They have to either give a stronger or frequent drug of a crude type. And now it reminds me of the analogous person who is in a boxing ring or a wrestling match. You just keep knocking them down, and that's what the pharmaceutical agents that are being used do. And they knock them down until there are no more, the effects of the drugs and the treatments have weakened them so much that now this person in the boxing ring has got black eyes, they've lost weight, they're losing focus, they can't concentrate, they have an inability to eat, or they their appetite, or they can't keep their food down. All the processes of elimination are weakened. And finally, what happens, they succumb to the disease, and what I know, it's faulty, isn't it? They said the disease from, is it, they say it's because of the disease, the natural part of the disease, all these things that were just described, instead of saying it was because of the drugged state that they were in, weakening their vital force. Isn't it strange that they keep requiring larger and more powerful doses of crude substances, while when we use the law of similars on the other end of the spectrum, we require a minimal dose, a very tiny amount. And even as the person is starting to improve, we use even less doses, even smaller amounts as we continue to see improvement. It's like convey the way that we see healing occur. Hahnemann also brings into the remedy the aggravation, so which oftentimes indicates and tells us that the minimal dose, the sim, is activated and has stimulated the vital force. So as opposed to a drug-induced state of suppressing and tamping down the vital force, we're enlivening and bringing it back into being. While, you know, so these are the comparisons between antipathy, antipathy, whatever you want to call it, suppresses the vital force. It does initiate some aggravation, but they keep pushing it down. So in aphorism number 61, there is a footnote, and that is returns us to aphorism number 46. And let me see if there's any comments coming in. I welcome everybody. I feel like there was a little TV show I watched as a little child where the lady would put up a mirror and send it out to all the people in TV land, and she would name everybody, and she would say, welcome Derek, welcome Manjo, welcome Jagat, welcome Nisant and Dr. Wakar, just to let you know that I see you and I welcome. So he tells us to go back to aphorism number 46 as a reference, which states examples might be adduced of diseases which in the course of nature have been homeopathically cured by other diseases, pre-similar symptoms, were it not necessary, as our object is to speak about something determinant and indubitable, to confine our attention solely to those few diseases which are invariably the same, arise from a phantasm, and hence merit a distinct name. Among these, the smallpox, so dreaded are the great number of its serious symptoms, occupies a prominent position, and it has removed and cured a number of met similar symptoms. How frequently does smallpox produce violent ophthalmia, sometimes even causing blindness? He, by its inoculation, DeSoto cured a chronic ophthalmia permanently, and Leroy another. An amaurosis of 2 years' duration, consequent on suppressed scald head, was perfectly cured by it, according to Klein. How often does smallpox cause deafness and dyspnea? And both these chronic diseases it removed on reaching its acme, as J.F. Kloss observed. Swelling of the testicle, even of a very severe character, is a frequent symptom of smallpox. And on this account, it was enabled, as Klein observed, to cure by virtue of, take a guess, similarity. A large, hard swelling of the left testicle, consequent on a bruise, and another observer saw a similar swelling of the testicle by it. Among the troublesome symptoms of smallpox is a dysenteric state of the bowels, and it subdued, as observed, a case of dysentery as a similar morbific agent. Smallpox coming on after vaccination, as well on account of its greater strength as its great similarity, at once removes entire pox homeopathically and does not permit it to come to maturity. But on the other hand, The cowpox, when near maturity, does, on account of its great similarity, homeopathically diminish very much. The supervenings then make it much milder, as Murray and many others testify. The inoculated cowpox, whose lymph besides the protective matter contains the contagion of a general cutaneous eruption of another nature, consisting of usually small, dry, rarely large pustule pimples, resting on a small red areola, frequently conjoined with round red cutaneous spots and often accompanied by the most violent itching, which rash appears in not a few children several days before, more frequently, however, after the red areola of the cowpox, and goes off in a few days, leaving behind small red hard spots on the skin. The cowpox, I say, after it has been taken, cures perfectly and permanently in a homeopathic manner by the similarity of this accessory miasm. Analogous cutaneous eruptions of children, often of very long standing and of a very troubled nature, as a number of observers assert. The cowpox, a peculiar symptom of which is to cause tension of the arm, cured after it broke out a swollen, half-paralyzed arm. The fever accompanying cowpox, which occurs at the time of the production of the red areola, cured homeopathically intermittent fever in two individuals, as the younger Hardage reports, confirming what J. Hunter had already observed, that two fevers, similar diseases, cannot coexist in the same body. The measles bears a strong resemblance in the character of its fever and cough to the whooping cough, and hence it was that Bosquillon noticed in an epidemic where both these affections prevailed that many children who then took remained free of whooping cough. They would have been protected from and rendered incapable of being infected by whooping cough in that and all subsequent epidemics by the measles, if the whooping cough were not a disease that has only a partial similarity to the measles, that is to say, if it had also a cutaneous eruption similar to what the latter possesses. As it is, however, the measles can but preserve a large number from whooping cough, and that only in the epidemic prevailing at the time. If, however, the measles come in contact with a disease resembling it in its chief symptom, the eruption can indisputably remove and effect a homeopathic cure of the latter. Thus, a chronic herpetic eruption was entirely and permanently homeopathically cured by the breaking out of the measles, as Cordham observed, an excessively burning miliary rash on the face and arms that had lasted 6 years, was aggravated by every change of weather. On the invasion of measles, assumed the form of a swelling of the surface of the skin. After the measles had run its course, the exam cured and returned no more. That sounds like the end of a happy story, like the end. It's and everyone lived happily ever after. It's kind of coming to that. Basically, he brings us to aphorism number 46 after from aphorism number 61 as a complete comparison of opposites. How 61 is showing the antipathic treatment and 46 is showing that it is a permanent cure through homeopathic similars, and that in aphorism 61, he indicates, quote, accidentally a chief ingredient in his prescription. So only when it is based on trial and error or just happenstance that antipathic medications can elicit a cure, it's only because of when there is a similar, a homeopathic, that is actually eliciting the cure. He gives us these examples as referred back in aphorism 46. And each time he talks about an example, he also repeats that it is a permanent cure. While in aphorism number 61, each time he gives an example, as in aphorism 50, 8 through 61. All of those examples are with the use of crude drugs based on opposites and suppression, where we do not see a cure, but only a temporary relief of symptoms, which then upon return once the medication is stopped. So what happens when you go to the doctor and get a prescription is you have to keep calling in or visiting the doctor for a refill. And then sometimes you're ending up with, actually Hahnemann says, you're bound to see aggravations, side effects, and worsening, which move to different parts of the body. Does anyone have any comments? Because we're coming to the end of the show. There's a few minutes left, and I think we've covered aphorism number 61 fully. Unless I move on, I can read aphorism number 62, which states, but on what this pernicious result of the palliative antipathic treatment and the efficacy of the reverse, the homeopathic treatment depend is explained by the following facts deduced from manifold observations, which no one before me perceived, though they are very palpable and so very evident and are of such infinite importance to the healing art. So one might think that Hahnemann here could be speaking in a haughty tone or a know-it-all tone, that he could say that no one before me perceived this. It is so palpable. You can, you know, when something is palpable, you can touch it. It's right there. You can taste it. It's, you cannot miss it. Now, I repeat again and go back to my initial question. Why is it that this is so obvious? Homeopaths understand it and know it. And I would like to know why is the allopathic people who are treating in that method blind? Why is it not palpable to them when they know it and they feel it and they see it in their everyday treatments? What is preventing them from trying homeopathy, believing homeopathy, experimenting with homeopathy? I would like to know an answer. Is it because they are all skeptics? Is it because they've all been brainwashed through their training? These are questions that I have, and perhaps Hahnemann himself had. I really don't know. I am going on, and I will say there's just a couple minutes left. Saji, okay, so anyone else have a comment? Because he says it's of infinite importance to the healing art to get our message out, and the best way, I think, is for educating the public, for reading the aphorisms, for reading about Organon, and imparting your knowledge to your local community, on your blogs, on your website, tweeting, whatever it is that you do. And I welcome all of your updates and comments so that I can read them over the air and get our knowledge out there. I want to thank everyone for listening today. We had a great group, and we will continue again tomorrow, depending upon the weather. So take your Organon off the shelf and read it. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.